Colbert?
May it please the court, my name is Dan Goldberg and I represent Derek Jones in this appeal. Mr. Jones' robbery conviction under 560.120 are not a violent felony, and therefore he was improperly sentenced as an ACCA offender. I think there's two reasons why the robbery statute does not satisfy the force clause. Of course, the relevant language of the statute is, quote, violence to his person or by putting him in fear of some immediate injury to his person, end quote. So I want to take the first clause.
Before we go there, can we talk about the 2255H gatekeeping requirements?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
What is it that he has that can show that the underlying sentence was relying on the residual clause? Because isn't that necessary to get you there? That's the one that's retroactive, et cetera, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
So the Walker case, the rule is that my client now must show by preponderance of the evidence that the residual clause led the sentencing court to apply the ACCA enhancement. And we concede that in sentencing Mr. Jones and using his robbery predicate convictions, the district court didn't make an express finding as to whether or not he was relying on the residual clause or the force clause. But I think under the legal environment test, we can make that showing. And how we make that showing is thusly. The only home for 560.120 is the residual clause. And that's for a number of reasons. I think Eighth Circuit case law that applied at his sentencing hearing, which was in 2001, there was no case law that said, hey, this satisfies the force clause, to my recollection or my knowledge.
Yeah, and in the absence of that, how does the legal environment help you?
Right. The Haley case, 1991 case, I think it cast into great doubt that it would satisfy the force clause because it said something along the lines that 560.120 was unlikely to produce death or great bodily harm. So I think what flows from that is that it wouldn't satisfy the force clause. The guidelines commentary would be another source that I'd point you to when Mr. Jones was sentenced.
Did you say would not satisfy the force clause?
Right. So if it doesn't satisfy the force clause, my contention is the only home for it is the residual clause, right? Because it's not an enumerated offense. If there's no home for it in the force clause, that's the only place.
I got you.
Yeah. So why is that not a factual determination to be made by the district court?
And I'm sorry, Judge, I just didn't hear your question. Why
is that not a factual determination that should be made by the district court rather than this court?
I think it's a great question, and certainly under Walker it might be. I think our position first is that the legal environment test conclusively establishes that the only home is for the residual clause. And I think even Walker had some language in it, and I could go to it, where if you can conclusively prove that the predicate conviction only satisfies the residual clause, then I think a remand just for sentencing is proper. I'm not exactly sure where that language is in the opinion, but I'm pretty sure it's there. In some cases, and this is from Walker.
Let me ask you, didn't we later, after the sentencing here in Kirkland, say that it qualified under the force clause?
That's correct, Your Honor.
I know, but that's not at the time of the sentencing, but wouldn't that have some indication that at least at a minimum the legal environment was not clear?
I think cases that have interpreted this legal environment test have said that if it happens way after, I'd say 5 years is pretty far after the sentencing hearing, that's not part of the legal environment at that point. And I think what's more illuminating is the guidelines. The guidelines have some commentary at 2001 that supported the residual clause and enumerated robbery as a qualifying offense. If it satisfied the force clause, there'd be no reason to put that in the guidelines commentary, I don't think, because it would be duplicative. I would point out that the government hasn't relied on Kirkland. I don't think they cite it in their brief. hasn't maintained to the opposite that's not controlling. I think our final position that is that if there is any doubt about the legal environment, we would request the remand pursuant to Walker. I think on the 2255 issue, on the 2255 issue, I think there is a preliminary issue as to whether or not this is properly preserved or raised by this court, sua sponte. And we certainly, I understand that there are issues this court has to raise sua sponte, jurisdictional issues. And let's say Mr. Jones would not have gotten a 2244 filed in front of this court and got permission to file a 2255. That'd certainly be a jurisdictional issue here.
Are you sort of relying on Day versus McDonough here? Day versus McDonough?
Woodville Milliard is what I'm thinking of, but maybe it's a similar.
Do either of those deal with a 2255H gatekeeping question?
I don't think it does, but I am trying to analogize it in the silent record type issue. Okay. And let me try to flesh out why I think it's similar. Here, when my client he gets the 2255 grant from this court, and I know that's a preliminary determination by this court based on Walker, he goes down to district court, files his 2255, maintains that it sounds in Johnson, it's not disputed by the government, the district court makes no findings to the contrary. I think the best we have is a silent record. And I think the government has frankly been treating the H2 issue and the F3 issues somewhat similarly and making the same type of argument that, hey, you can't make this issue retroactive. And therefore, I do think, for example, in the Miller case, a Tenth Circuit case, albeit, you do have a second successive procedural posture there. And there the government fails to raise the issue before the district court. And the issue is whether or not the Tenth Circuit should raise that issue sua sponte. The Tenth Circuit says, no, we can't do that, or we won't do it, because you haven't shown it to be an exceptional circumstance. And pursuant to the would-be Milliard case, the Supreme Court case, that's dispositive of this issue. And so I'd urge this court to take a look at that. And I think the Harlow case from this court, I think it's a distinct issue, but I think some instruction could be given from it where you have a successive 2255, which arguably sounds in Johnson. The government doesn't dispute it, and this court really doesn't analyze, I don't think, the silent record issue. And so I think a similar path should be followed in this case.
So, I don't mean to oversimplify it. So what's your first choice? What are you asking us to do? You can have a second choice.
First choice is to say that the issue's been waived by the government and that, therefore, since there's not an exceptional circumstance, that this issue should not or cannot be raised jurisdictionally sua sponte by this court. I think that would be the first choice.
And therefore,
Mr. Jones' claim that the Walker issue wouldn't apply, right, to Mr. Jones' claim, and therefore his 2255 was improperly denied and reverse remand for a new sentencing hearing.
But actually reach the merits, that you'd prefer that we reach the merits of that claim rather than sending it back to the district court for the 2255H gatekeeping issue?
Yes. I think that would be I guess there's three different alternative arguments being set forth fairly. The second would be to reach the merits and find that Mr. Jones's claim sounds in Johnson because the only home for 560.120 is the residual clause. So that would be the second position. And then the third position would be to remand it for the Walker analysis. If you don't have any other questions right now, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Very well.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon. Paul Becker, Assistant United States Attorney on behalf of the United States. This is not a residual clause case. Unfortunately, the government should have led with that in the initial briefing.
I wondered why the government didn't.
We had many discussions internally before Mr. Bowling came on board, because my sense was this wasn't, as I called, a Johnson 2 case. It was a Johnson 1 claim of physical force, which is not retroactive. But how does Johnson residual clause get you an opportunity to relitigate the physical force issue? And it was sort of a circular logic that if the convictions, the robbery convictions, did not qualify under physical force, then they must have been residual, and Johnson vacated residuals, so that's why Mr. Jones gets in the door. On Monday, and I don't know if you've had the clerk's office forwarded my 28J letter I filed yesterday. Did you?
We did.
The Monarski case?
Yes, it's Winarski, and Judge Grunder was on the panel. It went through that analysis, albeit with North Dakota burglary cases rather than Missouri robbery one cases, and said, okay, we granted you an opportunity to have a success of 2255 because we said Johnson, and that opened the door. But the claim under that's being litigated, the physical force claim, is not a residual clause claim. It's not related to Johnson 2. And then the second point that the Winarski court said, and that in that case, Mathis is not retroactive, and in my case, in this case, the Johnson 1 is not retroactive. So that leaves Mr. Jones out of luck.
So what are we to do, though, since this argument wasn't made by the government? You heard the
I guess I'm relying on the fact that your decision didn't come down till Monday and to focus it so clearly, and that the environment of the Johnson litigation has been all over the map, and correctly, the government should have led and said, this is not a residual clause case, despite what counsel says with some confidence that the legal environment at that time was that it was a residual clause case. The legal environment at that time was that it was a robbery and it was a force case, and no one really genuinely questioned that. Judge, you're correct that we should have led with this is not a residual clause case and shouldn't have to relitigate the physical force issue.
All right, but you've seen his arguments using Wood and McDonough to say that we can't do it sua sponte. What do you make of those arguments?
I'm making the argument now, whether or not it happened in the briefs and oral argument. Oral argument is an opportunity to bring out all of the positions on behalf of the United States. If you hadn't heard it at all and came up sua sponte on your own and said, boy, Mr. Becker, you missed that opinion we issued on Monday. What do you think about that?
Not usually. You'll find a whole bunch of cases that say we don't consider arguments that are first raised in argument.
Okay. Well, I think it's particularly on point here. It's one of the clearest opinions we've seen on the analysis of violent felonies that are not purely residual clause, because we have, obviously, you know better, this whole series of burglary cases, and now we have robbery cases and assault cases, so that the opportunity to relitigate physical force really shouldn't be there. It's, you know, in Winarski, you have a case where those burglaries may or may not be good anymore. Here, if we get to the merits, given yesterday's decision by the Supreme Court on physical force in Stokeling, the robbery here, and Justice Thomas goes through the history of how robbery was in the Armed Career Criminal Act, and at one point was an enumerated offense, and then was moved to the elements or force clause. It seems that analysis by Justice Thomas clearly showed robbery to be at the core of the force clause cases. So, if you get to the merits, unlike Winarski, where the burglaries may or may not be good anymore, here it's quite clear. Even if we go back and deal with the merits, the robbery one statute, in effect in 1975, would still be considered a violent felony. So unless you have further questions, I thank you very much. I ask you to affirm the district court.
Thank you.
Just to address 2 points the counsel addressed. First, the retroactivity issue. And I think Walker can be best read as it's about the residual clause. It's not so much about the retroactivity of Mathis or Johnson. If you've been sentenced exclusively pursuant to the residual clause, you've got a claim, I think.
I don't think so. I think it's only the Johnson case that was made retroactive by Welch, isn't it?
Johnson, too. But let's say if this were the record. At Mr. Jones' sentencing hearing, I could show you, the judge said, I'm sentencing you as an ACCA offender based on the residual clause because these offenses satisfy the residual clause. And that's the only reason why. Of course, that's not this case, but if that were the case.
Then I think you're golden, right?
Right. So it doesn't have to do, my claim doesn't so much turn on the retroactivity of Johnson 1, I don't think, in that hypothetical.
Well, I think his argument is that your underlying argument is a Johnson 1 argument, not a Johnson 2 argument, right?
And that's to show the legal environment, to show that there's no home for that prior conviction in the force clause, if that makes sense. The other issue I wanted to address was on the merits, the Stoeckling issue, and there was a portion that of the opinion I wanted to call to your attention. Our argument is that you can be convicted under statute for mere snatchings, and we cite to Missouri Supreme Court case law for that. And I don't think the Stoeckling opinion changes the Johnson force test in that context. And if you look at slip opinion page 12, Justice Thomas says, quote, similarly, a defendant who steals a gold chain does not use force within the meaning of the robbery statute simply because the victim feels his fingers on the back of her neck. And it's citing to a Florida case for that proposition. So I think the mere snatching of property still doesn't satisfy the force clause. And that's the problem here is that 560.120, you can be convicted by such little force that's not violent force. Unless there's other questions, I'd ask that you reverse and remand. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Goldberg. Appreciate your arguments and briefing. The case will be submitted and decided in due course.